you fit enough to drop brown bread by yourself. Just leaving that here for some framing. And that quote tweeted The Atlantic saying ICE agents only receive 47 days of academy training. And that came from a person who's known as Grip Skylark at Tallyberry Baby on Twitter. I moved to New York from the Twin Cities. So this is a very strange moment to be seeing. Seeing people I know talking about it in what's happening in their neighborhoods, what they're seeing as they take their kids to school and try to go to the grocery store, and the way that the community is coming together is heartening. It shouldn't have to be, but it is. Communities are coming together to create mutual support for families who are too scared to go to the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are not leaving their homes right now for very, very good reasons. And it's terrifying to see. And that the secretary of the Department of Homeland Security was standing behind a podium that said, "One of ours, all of yours."
Yeah.
That hits something scarily in my gut.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've been saying this a lot over the past few years, but I am so frustrated and so scared and so unsure of what to do other than throw up my hands and hide.
I hear you. And it's difficult. But again, knowing that we're not alone, knowing that there are many people around us, that means the world, especially if you're somebody who's trapped, somebody who feels like they can't even go outside without being grabbed, because either you don't have all the right papers and you're still in the process of filling out all the right forms, or you look like somebody that they might think fits that qualification. It's disgusting. And this is not at all what people, even people on the other side, you know, what they voted for. At least in my mind, the people I know who voted that way would never want something like this. They would want, you know, violent criminals and threats to society. Yeah, take them off the streets. Absolutely. But that's not what's happening. That's not what has been happening over the past year. And it's got to stop. It's got to stop. And if doing everything possible to stop ICE from finishing whatever it is they start, if that's the way to do it, then that's what has to be done. We need trained people, trained law enforcement to carry out law enforcement. You know, people who are qualified to do the job. We don't have that right now. We have a bunch of people who are power hungry and over weaponized, and they're abusing their power. There are so many videos out there of people who basically are commanded to stop, and then they have their windows broken by these thugs because they didn't stop fast enough, or they didn't stop in the right place. And these are citizens. Not that it should make a difference. You treat everybody with respect. This is one thing you learn traveling, is that people treat each other with respect. You know, you may have nothing in common with them, a totally different background, totally different language, but you treat people right. And that comes back to you. And what's happening now is so ugly, so disgusting, that if we don't fight it, if we don't destroy it, we're going to lose whatever it is that we have here in this country. It will fall apart. And we used to think we were immune from what's going on right now. We are not immune from that. We are not immune from whatever can come about as a result of this. You know, to bring it to technology, you know, I just want to ask this question. How many of you run Windows 95? Be honest. Be honest.
Now?
Yeah, now.
No.
Nobody?
No.
Okay, I'm surprised. Why? All right. I mean, Windows 95 is a good operating system. It worked, you know, connected to the internet and all that, and had programs that worked, and nobody, really? Nobody is running Windows 95. Okay,
I don't know. I'm not running it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's kind of honest. All right. Well, okay. I imagine you're not running it because you believe it's outdated, and I guess maybe you've updated to another Windows platform, or maybe you've gone to Ubuntu or something, or, you know, some other Linux distribution. You've upgraded, updated, you've modernized, right? Because that's what you do with systems. You don't leave them as old systems, because they're prone to all kinds of malfunctions, and things get really slow, and there's security issues, and it's just not smart. It's not smart to do that. Sure, you know, you could probably run some programs, but I really wouldn't advise connecting to the internet or to other computers, because, you know, they'll pass you around the campfire like a bag of chips. It's just basically, you know, you will be a victim. It's awful. What will happen to old operating systems? What we have in this country is a very old operating system, and I worry that it's not prepared for what is happening right now. You know, I'm seeing in the news that hey, the Congress is going to vote on the president's a power to invade foreign countries like Venezuela. You know, they're going to do that. This is considered a victory. But, okay, you know, in the unlikely event that it actually passes in the first place, the president can just veto it. He can just say no. So what kind of a system is that? You know, that seems like a very antiquated, outdated system where you need to rein in somebody, and the person you're trying to rein in can simply say, no, I won't be reined in. There's nothing you can do about it. We seem to have this scenario over and over and over again where this guy can just destroy the White House. He can get rid of public broadcasting. He can do all kinds of things, and nobody can stop him. He can get the Supreme Court to do his bidding, and there's no way around it. It just feels like, you know, if the Founding Fathers had maybe spent a little more time thinking of the possible scenarios out there, we'd have a better operating system. Or maybe we need a way to do some updates every now and then. What do you say, every Tuesday we do an update? You know, just send it out, and it works for computers. I really think it should work for governments, because right now all we have is a very, very broken system. Alex, do you agree? Do you think the system is broken? I know you're into the whole legal system, being a lawyer and all, but you must see that a lot of it is failing.
I do think so. I absolutely do think so. And what's it's really weird that you mentioned this, because my next article that I'm thinking of and already putting the bones together about is. Here's the working title for it: Democracy as Unpatched Code in a Failing State Machine. Literally, that's the working title of the next article that I'm writing. And I do think there's an analogy to be made here, right? Because we have a lot of modern democracies that do seem like they're almost like window dressing, in a sense. You think about, like, today in Brussels, they've gone 600 days without an actual government. It's kind of amazing. Like, so you have to really wonder, like, what is the actual function of modern democracies? And are we confusing uptime, essentially, with something like self-government and self-rule? You know, the fact that these systems just keep trucking along and haven't been rebooted and haven't been taken down and haven't been patched does not necessarily mean that they're great and that they're fit for purpose, right? Like you were trying to make this analogy, you're not running Windows 95 anymore because, you know, you'd be subject to attack. You need to update, you need to upgrade. And so I do think that we have a lot of broken processes, that we need a very serious reboot of democracy and think about how we do this, because to bring this back down to hacker terms again, democracy is just a system. It's a set of rules. It is a system that has certain vulnerabilities in it, and it has certain people exploiting those vulnerabilities in ways that I think we need to patch now. And the systems by which we ordinarily do this, namely the legislative process and the election of officials that we trust to represent the public interest, well, that those processes all seem to be in some way or another infected or also being exploited at this particular time as well. And it does seem like, almost from a constitutional perspective, we need to rethink how the system works, how it operates, how we can make it stronger and more resistant to these threat actors that were certainly not anticipated back in the 18th century.
It's when the founding fathers were constitutional malware. You can use that, by the way.
Yeah, I can use that. Yeah. I mean, it really is crazy that you're mentioning this particular analogy right now, because that was something I actually started writing earlier today. So I guess mediocre minds think alike.
I've heard that said.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So, it's a trying time, and I just hope we all stay alert and awake and involved, because that's the only way it changes.
Yeah, my thought when I was traveling was that, you know, we have a lot of support and interest and ideas, but we have a unique set of circumstances and problems, and we'll have to solve it in only ways we understand in this context. So as a system, it is what we have, and there's quite a bit that needs to be improved long term. But as it stands now, I think it's really just about our own sense of dignity and control as the design of the system dictates, with co-equal branches and the like. That system is, I think, lost faith and, or I would say, credibility, and it should be something that we can count on as a sort of guardrail, and that really deteriorates when you have like the kinds of flaws we're seeing in the judiciary and with our representative institutions. It just doesn't seem like they're really that busy with our interests.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that, Kyle. And I think that, you know, we really have to think about how we elect our politicians as well. I mean, there is like, we have a lot of people that are elected that don't necessarily feel like they have a mandate to represent the public interest, because they were never really elected on running for something like the public interest. And so I think in the absence of some kind of watchdogs or you know, robust civic or institutional, you know, equivalence, it's going to be, you know, really difficult for any kind of government, I think, to repair itself here. I think there needs to be more institutional changes. We have to change it, I think, from the outside in. And what I think is really quite fascinating, if you think about the history of our republic going back to the 18th century, these problems that we're having right now do seem to all be entirely unique. And so many of them seem to be born out of the misuse of technology and the misuse of data and the surveillance capitalism economy that we've allowed to be put in place, that allows these bad actors, foreign hostile actors as well, to target the polity and manipulate the people in certain ways that were never even imaginable 15 to 20 years ago. And so it's incredible how quickly things can degrade, how quickly this system can degrade and essentially become headless in so many ways. And I think if we don't act quickly to begin to repair it and to patch it, and perhaps it needs some downtime. And I don't know if that's necessarily a government shutdown. I don't think that's the kind of downtime that we're talking about, but I think time to think and repair and change some of the democratic processes that we've had in place, because I think we're sliding into an area and a time where it may be difficult to ever get out of this type of quicksand.
There's been some staying power with the protest actions, and also I think murmurings or just whispers of general strikes and walkouts and things like that, in at least some of the regional actions that are going on in response to the news cycle and the sort of horrific nature of what has been going on with ICE actions. But yeah, we could maybe expect some of that on a larger scale to actually have an impact and be felt, because those are valid forms of action that are really something that are the like last form of civil disobedience, I think, that people can really exercise en masse without facing the sorts of repression and authoritarian tactics and basically being cast as rioters or something when you're actually out there voicing your opinion and exercising your First Amendment rights. Because I think after a certain point, you reach a consensus with people that are in an action, and you need to have some other recourse, pick up the demands of people en masse and put that into action.
Yeah. And I you think, a lot of people saw that, when the folks in Minneapolis were characterized as violent rioters, and, you know, everyone saw the videos and knew that that was a lie, and they saw our highest officials just jumping into the lie without any evidence whatsoever within minutes of the incident itself. And I think a lot of eyes were opened at that point. We realized how low they will go and how much they will lie without any shame whatsoever. And meanwhile, characterizing the true rioters of January 6th as heroes, it's just we're living in the upside down. I mean, we really are. There was this piece that I keep seeing on late night TV about Trump appointing himself acting president of Venezuela on Wikipedia. And I was wondering, okay, first of all, how does a person do anything to themselves on Wikipedia? That's not supposed to be the way it works. It turns out that it was a doctored Wikipedia page, which I believe doesn't mean it was an edited Wikipedia page. It was a Wikipedia page that was simply made to look like it was changed when it wasn't. And that page called himself the acting president of Venezuela in a Truth Social post. So basically, he was spreading a lie on a Wikipedia page that did not exist, if I understand that correctly. The way it was being portrayed, though, in the media was that he had somehow changed the Wikipedia page, which I'm sure he believes he has the right to do, but he really doesn't. So did I have that right? I mean, I just had to do some research because it wasn't really being reported anywhere. Rob?
Yeah, anyone can make a Wikipedia page, not only change it to say anything you want and, get your screenshots or whatever, but you don't even have to go that far. If you edit a Wikipedia page, make the changes you want to appear have been made, and then just click preview, you will get that page as if you made those changes to it with no record of you doing so. So you would be free and clear to take screenshots and spread them around and do whatever you liked. But as opposed to if you actually edit a Wikipedia page and there's a log of your user account or your IP address or whatever, and also a digital screenshot is eminently alterable to say whatever you want in any case. So yeah, it's easy to fake.
So there's no record because you didn't actually do it. And if you did do it, you'd be set upon immediately by a whole bunch of Wikipedia editors who would quickly fix whatever it is you were trying to pull off.
So, yes, because there are crack Wikipedians out there who are very good. And Wikipedia has been so amazingly excellent at beating back the tide of biased and fake edits and things like that. It is really a triumph in terms of community-led projects, unlike so many out there. It is a shining beacon in the world of projects like this, where people who are actually there just to make it the best reference site that they can make keep it that way.
We need to recognize their contributions and the amazing value that they add to everything, really. And there are so many journalist outlets that get it wrong, that basically bow down to the pressure. we're seeing that everywhere in the corporate media, which is why the corporate media was always a bad idea. And, you know, we've railed against that for decades. Having massive corporations take over newspapers doesn't work out well, and we're seeing the proof every single day. So that's something to keep in mind. And, of course, you know, you can always start another paper. You can always, get more people involved and fight back against this simply by telling the truth. Okay, we have a letter I'd like to read. Our email address is oth@2600.com. Hi, all. Hope your new year is off to a good start. Well, I don't know about that. We're fine, but boy, everything around us is falling apart. But thanks. Thanks for the good thoughts. I'm looking forward to hearing many more great off-the-hook shows this year. Well, we will see. I hope Emmanuel and Kyle have made it back safely to the U.S. from CCC, as well as Alex from the fancy dress party in London. Yes, I hope he enjoyed that too. I would really like to hear their and the rest of the crew's perspective on the attack that Martha Root performed live at CCC that is making the rounds. This is from Frank. And, you know, that's an interesting question because Kyle and I were at CCC, the Chaos Communication Congress in Hamburg, and this Martha Root talk, somehow we missed that. There were so many talks. There really were tons of them. So it's not hard to miss things. But we didn't find out about this until days afterwards. But basically, Martha Root, from what I understand, hacked a some kind of a dating site for white supremacists live on stage and was able to reveal the identities of their entire user base. I'm not sure I have that totally right. You're waving your hand frantically, Alex. So what, go ahead, correct me.
I'm going to pass it over to Rob to explain the urgency here.
Yeah, because we read this letter and talked about this story last week when you Emmanuel and Kyle were not with us. The story was amazing, and there's been this huge reaction to it. But you know, we did go into depth on what happened and how it happened, and but there has been there since last week's show, there has been an interesting update to it, a story from the 11th from the Observer in the UK. A couple of those leaked white supremacist dating site profiles have been linked to Tory and Reform councillors. A conservative councillor, that's a member of representative government over there, has been suspended after her account was included on a leaked user list from one of the sites. The Pink Power Ranger performed this great act of superheroism at CCC, and our friends at DDoS Secrets were hosting some of the material, not putting it all out into the public, but making it available to researchers and journalists who requested it for, you know, proper reasons. And this story appears to be the result of that. People found by the Observer in the database, this from the story here, appear to include an ex-member of the British National Party, activists within the neo-Nazi group Patriotic Alternative, and a man who ran for political office for Britain First. Also listed is Lilith Osborne, a former teacher and conservative councillor in Glastonbury, Somerset. And when she joined the pro-white dating site before she was elected, she described her political orientation as pro-white and said she was seeking a partner interested in indigenous European spirituality. There has been fallout from this amazing move on the part of the Pink Power Ranger over there in Germany.
So I know that whenever something like this happens, there are questions raised about privacy, about doxing people and things like that. Where is the line? Because, if I got a list of everybody who voted MAGA, I don't think it would be appropriate to release that list. But we're talking about people who are overtly white supremacist here. And I believe that's the difference, is it?
I think that's a part of it. But also these people who are in government, who are in public service, and as such need to be prepared for the level of accountability that comes with that sort of work, theoretically. We're not seeing that always the case, at least in this country. But these people who were in positions of power in the UK, who on the down low were on a neo-Nazi dating app, I think that's worth knowing. That knowledge is worth spreading out there. And at least one politician seems to have lost their job as a result.
Well, if it's on the down low, they're going onto this white supremacist site and entering their real name. So how much on the down low is it actually?
Well, I think that's also part of what the presentation included, was that part of it was that the security and the practices, the
OPSEC.
Thank you. Were so small. It was terrible. And the fact that Martha Root was able to set up an AI chatbot, lure in users and get them to identify a bunch of information about themselves. The sites that got wiped are so gross. Sites, plural. Mm-hmm. And this whole story is fascinating. We did talk about it a lot last week, but yeah.
I didn't listen to last week's show. I'm sorry. But, you know, it was an interesting letter, and I wanted to talk about it a little bit, too. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it kind of is an interesting test as to what the boundaries are, as to what should be considered private and what needs to be known. And I think if people are, you know, espousing white supremacy, that needs to be known, especially if they're in positions of power. But, you know, I'd also like to know if my neighbor is a white supremacist. I think that's of interest. You know, that could definitely come up in the future. This is something that I think is important. And I don't know, will we see more things like this? Well, I guess if people are dumb enough to do this, yeah, we will.
Also, I think in the context of something like this, like if you're putting yourself out there on a, let's say a dating app, and you know, the info you're putting about yourself on there is stuff you're sending over the internet about yourself, and you're ready to go out into the dating world and say, this is, hey everyone, this is who I am. Shouldn't you be ready to back up all that same, this is who I am, in terms of being accountable to a public who you serve?
Well, I guess we'll see now. We are going to have overtime tonight on YouTube. We haven't done that in a while. What you do is you go to youtube.com/channel2600, or just go to the link that's on the front page of 2600.com. Join us at 8 o'clock, and you can listen to us talk more and maybe even call in and have all kinds of fun in that regard. I wanted to close, though, with a couple more observations about our travel overseas. You know, we tried, Kyle especially tried to get you know, the hard plastic cards that are a contactless RFID that you use to get onto buses and trains and things like that. And, you know, we noticed in a couple of cities, in Warsaw, basically, and in Prague, you can ride mass transit for next to nothing or completely free if you are over a certain age, which I happen to be. And so it was suggested to me, particularly in Prague, that, you know what? You don't have to pay anything to ride the buses and the trams and the trains. All you have to do is show your passport if you're challenged, or show your license or whatever. And that's it. So, you know, I find that very interesting that there are free buses in many parts of the world. It works. The system really works. Some cities also offer this to students. So don't tell me it can't work in New York. I think it can. It just has to be done intelligently. And it's going to be an interesting test ahead to see if we catch up to the rest of the world. Alex, I'll let you have the last word on this, because we got
to
go.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'd like to say to the struggling masses contemplating the free buses out there that the reality of the fact is, if you ride the buses, like I do very often in the city, mostly nobody pays anyway. These buses, these MTA buses in Manhattan, I think maybe 85% of the people probably don't pay for them now anyway, so I doubt there'd be much of a difference to the MTA's budget, even if people started paying, or we should just make them free, because right, they're kind of symbolic anyway.
We have to leave it there. We're going to close with a public service announcement, and we'll see you on Off the Hook Overtime at 8 o'clock on YouTube, and next week here on WBAI at 7 o'clock. Good night.
This is a public service announcement with guitar. dumb enough to actually try it. Know your rights. These are your rights. Oh, know your rights. These are your rights. Oh, the other.
Shotgun shells. Hey, everybody! It's Christmas time!
Rec-X-Mess 1273 presents the upbeat, feisty, feasty mix with oddball audio gifts for you.
Lights and display contest. Oh no! My own dog gone commercial. I can't stand it.